right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and the occasional article at Gathering Magic.
Very rarely,
me,
Snack
as
Time.
As always, interrupting me,
snack
as always,
is the
one and only master of weens, Mike Cinnamon Linneman.
Welcome to be back, Anthony. You are still alive. It's
Yeah, oh my God.
Ant is...
Dude, I've been having such a rough couple of weeks. It's been insane.
I think the post-Vegas, it's like a hangover that's lasted like 5 or 6 weeks, which is really incredible. I didn't think it would. Like, I'm still dealing with Vegas things now, which is comical to me.
I have such a backlog of things that I really wanted to be doing, and now it's just, I'm playing catch-up. But it's good. We're getting back into the swing of things. I got the new mic set up. I'm going to get some additional things set up here that we can pump these out a lot quicker and also with a lot more quality. So
we're both into both of that stuff. So let's kick it off. This week is a Flavor Jam week. New set comes out. We talk about the five faces of Vorthos, which is Ant's seminal article written in 2015 that needs an update. We both know. And
it's time. It's time.
Way overdue. And to summarize, the Vorthos people are the people into art, flavor, and other things. Mark Rosewater clarified this point after Matt Cavada coined the term. And Rosewater said it's someone who appreciates the beauty behind the game, which Ant has argued for and against. And instead, Ant, you came up with five things that are actually a little more apt, which are what?
Right. So basically, they're the five things that I feel like, you know, any Vorthos can kind of put themselves into this category if they want to find like-minded individuals. That's really why I wrote that article to begin with, because Vorthos covers such a broad spectrum. And so I kind of distilled it down into the artist, the writer, the oracle, the dreamer, and the gamer. And really all that means is, like, the artist is someone who enjoys the visuals of the game. The writer is someone who enjoys the written aspect of the game, being names, flavor text, that sort of thing. The dreamer is someone who really appreciates the storyline of the game, so the overarching story behind the cards. The oracle is someone who likes to bring magic into their own life, be it via like a Rakdos tattoo or like a Golgari t-shirt or cosplay, things of that nature. And then finally, the gamer is someone who really enjoys that narrative flavor in their own games of magic. So the greatest example of that would be a card like Form of the Dragon.
Yeah.
That allows a player to take on the form of a dragon. It is a very evocative, very flavorful card.
Okay, that totally makes sense. Well, then let's not waste time here. Just jump right into it. First up, artist, the OG, my favorite. Ant, I'm going to let you go first on this one, though. I really want you to kick this off.
All right. So for my artist flavor gem, I did Bantu's Last Reckoning. And I picked this one mostly because our boy, Victor Adame, is really starting to kill it lately. Like, it's becoming unfair. I feel like every piece of art he puts out is my new favorite art for Magic of, like, all time.
He's better than average, no doubt.
Yeah, it's absurd. And I picked this one in particular because, you know, being someone who, you know, likes to draw in their free time or whatever, like, I'm nowhere near artist level, but, you know, I enjoy it. And I understand how difficult it can be to accurately capture emotions, and especially in like humans. So for someone to capture such a raw emotion as someone's last stand in not only a character but a character with a crocodile head, like, I feel like there's more emotion coming out of Bantu here than we've seen in, like, 90% of the humans across this entire game.
That's fair.
And like, that is such an incredible feat to, like, look at this and you feel, like, the visceral pain that this character is going through. And it's mind-blowing. Like, I saw this thing in the file and I was blown away then. I'm blown away now. It's going to make one heck of a playmat.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I don't care that god dies, because that god totally sucked. Just an awful, awful creature. Just the worst. But I do like Dark Ritual into this, which is an amazing play in Cube. Okay, yeah, I like it. It's minimalistic. It reminds me of the Kev Walker sort of feel with the no background, but yet giving a little bit of Victor flavor. I dig it. Right. I went for the new guy. I went for the new artist joining this set, Piotr Jablonski, which is totally butchered in both characteristics. Why? Because a lot of us have to get an interview of him to figure out how do you say your name. And the card is Apocalypse Demon. No flavor text, and get that out of here. But the card art, it's just a simple demon. I mean, it's just a flying demon, has an anthem, has a effect where it's scales, and, you know, tap sound, let's just add another dude. Fine. It could be any demon, could be any place. And they've been reusing this demon concept, which we've seen that, you know, our boy Seb McKinnon made, with this facial mask with like two spines on the end, almost insectile, flat in the front, almost a zombie-like face. That's fine, cool. Standing demon looks creepy, almost like the creepypaste sort of like 4chan things from the mid 2000s, right? Like it super does. But the scene itself, it's
what did you call it? Creepypaste?
Yeah, like the creepypasta, you know, like the copy and paste. Anyway, there's like a whole.
It's kind of like the creepypaste, you know, from the 90s. Creepypaste.
No. I'll put it here. What are you talking? It's the creepypasta. Like it's a thing where like Slender Man and all that crap came out of.
No, I know what that is. I know what copypasta is, but like creepypaste.
Creepypaste. Got to add a little bit of flavor to it. This is a flavor show. You know how it is. So. why I picked this, it's because of the crop. In looking at the original thing, you're like, oh yeah, cool, it's a demon. And some of these, the card quality of these cards, a lot of them printed dark, so you missed a lot of things in this card, especially, you know, cracking it open. So you finally see a higher res image, which we've attached, and you're like, oh, okay. So the it's not like these people with this demon are willingly there. Which is an interesting thing. Usually you'd be like, okay, some sort of necromancer brings things.
Yeah,
some
kind of like supplicants or something.
Sure, or like cultists or something like that. But here it's, oh, no. This isn't a black-aligned person doing this. It's maybe a different color and brings a demon in with your white army and biscuits. And even that, cool and neat, and it really ties into that gamer. But I could have added for that section. But why I chose this is the pillars. So you look at the pillars behind this demon and you realize that, you know, the giant pillar that's broken off and the one still standing, that this is a ruin or slowly becoming a ruin of sort because of the Hour of Devastation. And this falling apart of this giant hall is reminiscent of Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's straight up concept. The Balrog is chasing them down the hallway, you know, and... Right. Maybe the Balrog was just hungry originally, and it just needed to eat, right? Instead, and you know, like in the game,
Balrogs gotta eat, man.
You know, they just get hungry. But here, you know, it evokes that just by seeing a full res art. You're like, oh, it's the Balrog from Lord of the Rings. Oh, that's very clever. And using this idea of sacrifice needs to eat. You know, maybe it's sick of eating goblinses and wants something different. You know, so I just thought that was a really fun, playful concept as an art description, and it just phenomenally painted. I mean, the gym
this image is incredible.
He's just absurd. Like, these are the things that I wish could be playmats, but the aspect ratio is a little goofy because it's almost an entire square. But beautiful work, and I want him to see everything, and a lot of his work is traditional, which is amazing.
Is this?
This is not, no. But a lot of...
I mean, honestly, this image could be, it's like a still frame in a horror movie or something. Like it's got such great detail and it's so, you know, believable, I think. And that's something that in recent demons, like, honestly, I haven't really felt that way about a demon since our first spin on Innistrad, when we saw like the Archdemon of Greed and like Grizzlebrand, and they had these, like, you know, really visceral looking veiny arms and stuff and like leathery wings, and it really felt real, you know, and this is creepy on a good level.
I think it's like the arms don't look like demony. It looks like just a skeletal, wasted away, like zombified demon. And you know, it's not a zombie, but it's just it's phenomenal. Like, if this is the new crop of artists, like, man, I can't wait for the next few months. Oh boy, biscuits, right. It'll be fun.
And I think it's really important to go back to what you said earlier about the gameplay narrative, because you're absolutely right. Like, this card has a very typical demon mechanic in that you're sacrificing creatures. But this set is all about putting you in the mindset of the arch nemesis. Like, it's all about you feeling like Bolas, right? And because Bolas is the star. It's his hour of devastation. And something as subtle as just making the little 1-1 white soldiers, as you call them, running away from the demon, puts you in that mindset of like, oh, maybe when I summon a bunch of tokens and I sack them to my really powerful demon, those tokens might not go willingly. Like, usually when you're playing the role of Planeswalker and you're beating your friend at the kitchen table, you just assume that you have these loyal followers that'll throw their life away for you in order for your demon to stay full and smash face.
Yep.
But this piece of art is suggesting, like, well, maybe you're actually playing the role of the villain and you're just killing a bunch of citizens.
Biscuits.
You ever think of that?
Biscuits. Like,
and there are a lot of little nods like that throughout this whole set that I think are... That's the part of the art direction that I really like.
Yeah, I think that part was done well. Yeah. That gaze, that lens that you need to look from. Whereas Innistrad, it was, you know, ground level because you had to put yourself in as a human. Whereas here, again, villain. Great work, super good thing piece. Wonderful that it's a rare for a new person. But moving on, we only got 30 minutes, and we got to pound through some. The writer. I don't know. I looked at yours and I didn't quite understand it. So I'm going to let you a minute to think, and I'm going to go first on this.
All right.
I chose my favorite curse in the set, Fraying Sanity. And one is because the curses are back, and this one's really good. I'm all about that mill. I have a Dollar General deck, 1DH. All cards in Commander deck are under $1. Super fun. You play it unsleeved. Plastic bag as a deck box. It's just hilarious. It's like playing back in the 90s again as like a teenager, like a 12-year-old. But Fraying Sanity, I mean, it's a mill curse, but the flavor text just feels so cheesy that I love it. Because it's, you know, it's about those wound Titus are first to unravel. And immediately it's like mind's fraying, mind unravel, like... You could just see a writer just throwing things until something stuck perfectly to a mill mechanic. And I'm like, those wound Titus, the first round unravel. I'm like, you know, actually the people that are wound up type A personalities, yeah, those are really the ones that break first. And that makes me laugh.
And it's kind of funny, too, that, like, you have to remember that, you know, we've been playing this game since we were, like, 8, 9, 10 years old. Some of us even younger, right? And... Sure. Flavor texts that really spoke to us as like an angsty 13-year-old are silly to us now as a 30-year-old.
Agreed.
Right? But as a writer, sometimes you have to think about like, okay, well, what are those like quippy little one-liner messages that would have blown 13-year-old Mike's mind, where 30-year-old Mike is like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, right. It's no rancor, right? But I really liked this line in particular because it does just that. Like, I can see a you know, young kid who's playing the game and, you know, he or she reads this flavor text and like, oh wow, you know what? Yeah, I can kind of see that. Like, if I'm really wound up, like, I just kind of lose it and I lose control. Like, that's a neat little life lesson on a card. Like, I can see them appreciating it much more than, you know, someone like you or I might.
Well, also the idea of what a mill is, this discarding or cards from your graveyard, like, what does that mean? Like, that ability to interpret it with literally seven words is so cool.
It's hard to do. Sure. And you know, it's very... I really liked this line in particular.
I dig it. That's all I got for this one. Art's fun. I think it... I mean, Ryan Lee's I'll always be killing it. That's the only one I got for that. What do you got, Ant?
All right, so I did Hour of Devastation, and I did this one for one reason in particular. I wanted it to spur a conversation between the two of us. So this is the second set ever to have a card within the set that shares a name with the set. The only other time this has happened was Conflux.
In the set, correct. Because Future Sight was a card, but it
was
not in.
There are many other cards who share a name with a set,
but
they weren't
actually
in the set itself.
Correct.
So I put this here because I just wanted to ask you, what do you think of that? How, what is your opinion of having a card in the set that shares a name with the set itself?
I mean, it depends on the set name. Like, right. If that set name would have turned out to be Conquest of Power, I would have been like, oh boy. You know?
Or like, so like Nemesis, right? The set Nemesis, it could have had a card that was called Nemesis.
Yeah, right, and that would be cheesy because it's just a one-worder and you're like, fine. Like, but I think as we get more complex names... You know, like, if it would be, like, a shard of Alara, and, you know, there's five, yeah. There's a shard of something else and a shard of something else. I think that it's fine. I do like the idea how it's part of a cycle.
Right.
That I really enjoy, because then the marquee name of the set is something that's good. Right. I think if the name of a set was, like, a combat trick that gained you life, I'd be really salty. Like, I'd be a salty peanut about it, 100%. But in the fact that not only does the name align to my expectations, but the mechanics are strong. It's a really strong card. This is a cube card because it's a red way to deal with planeswalkers. So for that aspect, great. Now, if they can keep the name of the set as a card being a boom boom, do it all the time. Sure, why not? I mean, obviously, like, Dominaria doesn't make any sense to make it as a card.
But, right, exactly.
But, like, as they have, like, Thing of Thing or Dark Ascension, where it'd be something that would be ascending, cool. I think that's a great idea. I am totally fine with it as long as the card is pushed a little.
Yeah, I think if there is an extremely pivotal event that is occurring
okay,
in
so
the
it's a,
story,
a story line, spotlight, fine.
It doesn't even really.
I think it needs to be.
I agree. So, but the thing really is that, like, if there is such an event that it is so telling of what the set is about that you're willing to name the set after that one singular event. So, like, in Alara block, the Conflux. Like, the Conflux was what the plot was revolving around, right? And so to name a card after that moment and also have a set named after that moment, like, that makes sense to me. And the same thing goes for Hour of Devastation. Like, the Hour of Devastation is the climax of this block.
Right.
And so it's deserving of a card, right? Like, it's such a pivotal event.
Yeah, it does make sense.
Over the course of this story. And so, you know, when a set is named after an event like that, I think it makes complete sense to also have a card representing that event. Because, you know, if it's important enough to name your set after, it's probably important enough to show up on a card, right?
I think that's fair.
That's a safe bet.
I think it's fair. And I think longer set names would definitely play into this a little more as well.
Right, but something that's more abstract, like the Battle for Zendikar. Like, yeah, I don't know that you could capture the entire Battle for Zendikar on one card. That would be kind of weird.
Sure, but like Oath of the Gatewatch, what if there was one card that was
like
one...
like a five-color card that
Correct.
Was the five
Correct.
Gatewatch people? Yeah, you could totally do that.
I don't think that's cheesy at all. I think it's a phenomenal thing that I would love to see more of.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be a heck of a challenge for people to name and flavor appropriately. I think that'd be a great challenge for that team.
I think it's interesting that the only two times this has ever happened are at the culmination of two bolus plots.
Everything is a bolus plot, Ant. What do you mean?
I mean, bolus plots that we saw in print.
Everything
okay.
is a bolus
Fair.
Plot. Everything
okay, tinfoil.
Is.
Now, you yell at me for having a tinfoil okay. hat. You got tinfoil hats on your weens.
Me and Chaz were boys. Yeah, I agreed, and I think he's the most popular villain, so I could see why he will have like ebbs and flows when he's relevant. Right. Yeah, I mean, more of them would be cool, and it's also cool to put a dragon on anything, right?
That's fair.
Fair. Next one up, Ant, Oracle.
Right.
That would be the bridges the gap.
Correct.
Between the real and the unreal, i.e., cosplay. But a lot more than cosplay, actually, too. I don't know. I'm really interested to hear about yours. Mine's pretty straightforward. What do you got?
Yeah, so mine, I have Neheb the Eternal. I picked Neheb just because they're the most high profile of the Eternals in the set.
Right.
I just personally want to see someone eternalize themselves. Like, I want to see a cosplayer just be an eternalized version of, you know, MJ or an eternalized version of Sprankle. Like, I think that alone would be really cool. But also, and I got to continue my trend here, I think instead of like a tuxedo t-shirt, and an eternalized t-shirt would be pretty dope.
I do eternalized, like long sleeve.
Oh, like a long, like, oh, dude, feety pajamas? Like a onesie? Eternalized onesie.
I mean, of course. I mean, why would I not want a footy pajama? Everybody wants footy pajamas.
We need a footy pajamas that you can eternalize yourself on one side, and then you can reverse it and just be a mummy on the other side.
Yep. Done. I live in Minnesota. We need it for the winter. Real talk.
Yeah. That's legit.
That'd be sweet.
I feel like we could get those made.
I got a guy for that.
You got a onesie guy?
I got a footy pajama guy.
You got a onesie guy in Minnesota?
I do. Cold like Minnesota. Totally. So I went something pretty simple, pretty underplayed here, and I chose Traveler's Amulet.
Okay.
Why I chose it is this is low budget cosplay.
I mean, it's not even that. It's like you don't have to think of it like cosplay. See, that's the one thing that like I always try to reiterate whenever we talk about
this. I know, but it's
you don't have to. It's just like if you wore, you know, Golgari t-shirt or a necklace with a Golgari pendant on it, like it's not necessarily cosplay.
Whoa.
You're just bringing magic into your world.
Let me finish, King Wizard. I got finished here. Cripes. So Traveler's Amulet, look at the edges. It looks like a paper plate. You could totally take a paper plate, cut out the middle, maybe paper shade this a little bit, paint it, and you
like
put it up.
It's like kindergarten crafts.
Yeah, for kids.
Okay.
So you could make this as a necklace for kids, maybe a kid's pre-release like Bruce does. Maybe you do this in a classroom. Like, what if you're like a teacher? How fun would that be? You know, you're teaching a unit about games, and then you get to make a thing from the game. Or, you know, make this as a net amulet, sure, wear it to your pre-release, whatever. But I think of, like, an arts and crafts thing at, like, a GP or a con. And, you know, they might have coloring book pages and whatever. And then one, the big thing at the end is you get to make a Traveler's Amulet. And I think that'd be the coolest low-budge thing to bring home.
Yeah, that's fair. That'd be a cool idea.
No, I mean, for kids, you always got to think easy, cheap, and fun, and something you don't expect. Coloring books is the easy thing, but, like, making a thing from the game that isn't, like, a sword, that's super cool.
Right.
Dig it. All right, next up, Anthony the Dreamer.
That's right. So the Dreamer is all about the storyline. I picked Gideon's Defeat. Really, I picked the whole cycle here.
Yeah.
And I picked it mostly because, you know, like, as our story evolves, right, and we have this cast of characters and they experience different things in their lives and whatnot, we're starting to see a lot more creative takes on exactly what you can do with a story card. And, you know, we saw this in the previous set where we had a card that represented, like, Chandra's reunion with her mother. And I really like the fact that the creative team is starting to look at their own story objectively and think, like, what are the moments that would be really cool? Like, what are the things that only this set can give us that no other set will be able to give us? And seeing the entire Gatewatch get defeated first person from the viewpoint of Nicol Bolas himself, like, that will... How often does that come? Like, will never happen again, probably. Who knows? But
probably not, no.
I can appreciate the fact that they saw that as a great moment to include on the cards. And it's something that, you know, storyline fans really enjoy. You know, like, something like this is so much better than, like, Gerard and Squee arguing over, like, a squishy toy or whatever.
Okay, you do not talk poorly about Squee's toy. you do not say.
Which, by the way, is there a Squee's toy doggy?
No,
doggy
and, there,
toy,
and there,
toy?
There needs to be a Squee's dog toy, like, sold at every convention.
We should just make merch, man. I got merchandise ideas for days.
You need a merch guy? I got a merch guy.
You got a merch guy in Minnesota?
We're just going to have you and Rico sit down and just pound out everything.
Just make some weird stuff.
I'm into it. So I noticed how cheap this effect is. I mean, for one mana, one white mana, you get to exile a creature. That is ridiculous. I mean, that's like, you know, Path to Exile has a, you know, a downside. They get a land, Swords of Plowshares. They get life. Here, there's no downside. It's just, other than it being a white creature. So, can this sit in the sideboard, like, forever? Can this be an answer to if Gideon ever becomes too powerful in Standard? Ahem. You know, they can attack, right. You gain 5 life, and he kills their Gideon. That is stupid swing. I was like, oh, that's a cheap effect. But I like these color hoser things. I think they're cool for longer rage formats when there's problematic things. And they probably weren't even thinking about that. Like, if yeah. Gideon ever gets oppressive in Modern, they now have a switch
have
to get out of it.
Right. Yeah.
Built
I,
in.
See, and I always love to see the color hosers in their own colors. Like, I love the idea like that nobody knows how to deal with white better than white.
I do like that. When it was like, well, Destroy Target Black Creature was one of them, too.
Right.
I did like that, too. It's hard to use them, but I'm like, that makes sense, though.
Right.
My dream of the storyline thing, it is straight the idea of eternalizing. Like, eternalize is a mechanic. I understand that, but the card claim to fame by known Canadian artist Jason Rainville was the one of the marquee artworks in Fame of it was on booster packs, and I was like, what is this business? Why is he blue? What? But the part that we saw late was claim, this idea of how they had to become eternalized, and we don't really ever get to see how that happens. We're like, oh yeah, they become blue, but how? How does that happen? And in looking in claim, it's like, all right, you return target creature, mana cost 2 or less, so it's probably human, clearly, and then the fame, you know, they get +2/+0, haste, boom, they come back hot. So it's straight eternalized in one card, explained from a different lens. And the artwork for claim is straight up a person sitting on the table with pieces of Lazotep, the stone that helps it get eternalized, that informs you of, oh, this is a ritual, this is an important thing, and it takes a lot of Lazotep to do this. And I think that's so phenomenal, storyline-wise, that it explains a thing not using the mechanic that is the thing. And that I think is just phenomenally cool. It'd be like if they explained how slivers worked without using a sliver card.
Right.
Love that idea. Love it, love it, love it. Like, that takes some really deep thinking to think about, okay, we have a mechanic here. It's kind of a weird one. How can we show that happening? They did a little bit of this with Infect, with the
glistening oil.
So you could see it. But I've never thought about it in that fashion to say, oh, you needed a card to explain what this thing was.
Right.
And here it did it, except it just didn't say it was. And it just kind of went, bah. A Vorthos like me actually cared about a mechanic from a different angle, which was strange.
Yeah.
Dig it. All right. Last one we got.
Last but not least, man, we got the gamer. So this is a flavorful mechanic, you know, some kind of a narrative. Being told through the mechanics.
Right, do it.
Right. So what I have here is Overwhelming Splendor. This is my favorite curse in the set.
Mm, it's a good one.
Because this card literally puts you in the position of the God Pharaoh, right? Like, you look at your opponent, you say, I am God Pharaoh Nicol Bolas. You will bow before me, as will your entire army.
Right, right.
And you just literally point at them and say, you're humbled. Like, mechanically, you, player, are humbled. Bow down.
I don't know what to even say about that. Like, it's so perfect in that.
Yeah.
Like,
that's why I picked it.
It's almost like it's like a Kendrick Lamar song.
And it's a mic drop, you know? It's just like, it's I'm done. This is perfect. Like, there is nothing that you can say to this.
I like how it dropped on a 1/1 and not like an 0/1. Like, they still retained the ability to attack, but like, meh.
Yeah, how cocky is that?
Yeah, right.
It's like, no, I'm gonna let you have some power. But, because I know that even that isn't enough.
I do like that. I like that. Subtle arrogance in mechanics. Thanks, Melvin. Fun. I dig that. I love 8-drop curses too. Like, what?
Yeah, right. Like, they better do something.
They better do something good.
I just spent 8 mana on this. If it doesn't win me the game.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
I picked,
all right, what do you got?
I picked another cube card. opposition. It's one of the few times we've used one of the special cards. This is Invocations here. And in an opposition here, I mean, it's pretty common known card to use in Cube in blue. You get a bunch of stuff, you start tapping their lands or tap their creature or whatever. You generally have planeswalkers and you can just grind out a game. Cool. But the gaming mechanic here that I saw with the Locust God is just so tasty. It's so flavorful that, you know, you can put in an opposition into play. You know, it's a four drop. Locust God is six drop. And as soon as you get start drawing a card with it, it becomes the ability to tap things down with opposition, which is exactly what the art is.
Right.
I think
that is incredible.
That's
something that, you know, we rarely talk about, because usually for the gamer, we have to tie it to some kind of narrative that's driven through the mechanics.
Something.
But in this particular instance, it is narrative that is driven through the art.
Right.
And I think that alone is fantastic art direction. Like, just being able to think like, oh, this card's being reprinted because its art used to be really weird and didn't make any sense, but it's a really good card and people use it a lot. What does it do? Oh, tap an untapped creature to be able to tap something else. Well, you need a whole bunch of creatures for that. Do we have anything in the set that makes a whole bunch of creatures? Oh, yeah, we do. We have this god that shows up with like thousands of little derpy things.
Yep.
And it's just, it's per, like the, it slowly brings you, and they're like, oh, by the way, it's in the right colors for that god. Like,
yeah.
Oh, haha. You know, like, it's so perfect because I can see, you know, so many players sitting down to build their commander deck, and maybe they happen to open opposition, you know, in one of their sealed pools or whatever.
That'd be nice.
And, you know, they're just like, oh, wait a minute, there's Locust on here. Oh, wait a minute. These mechanics are like perfect for each other.
Yeah.
And it tells this beautiful narrative. Like, alone, opposition doesn't really have a narrative.
Not really.
It's just like, ah, whatever, you're tapping a creature, you're tapping something else. But here it's like, no, I'm swarming you with locusts. And I'm literally going to create locusts and tap them to tap your stuff down.
Yeah. It's
like
it's by far the best gameplay game or Vorthos thing I have seen thus far.
In a long time.
Very, very long time. I mean, this is built into the set of, oh, we're gonna make a two card combo for some commander players.
With art. It's
with
a two card combo with art.
Like, that's
like, that's the money. That's the money part.
It's
this is a two card art combo.
And I put the larger art down below, and I'm really blown away by that. And after I wrote my big art review and saying, well, you know, this is one of the things coming from God, you know, to get the people out of Egypt, sure, fine. But then I started, after I submitted the article, I'm like, oh man, I totally missed that point. That it totally interacts with the Locust God, like, one-to-one. Oh, if they keep doing this with Invocations, talk about a way to get people excited about them.
Right.
Marquee card, legendary creature that has a card built into it that you want to build the deck around.
That ties into the existing set that it's in.
Silly.
Like, talk about linking the past to present. Like, it's...
That's silly. That's silly for silly for enfranchised players to want to build a new deck using known things they have. Just mind-bogglingly good. Like, mind-bogglingly good. So that's the gamer. Love it. We always do add some honorable mentions. And what is yours and why?
So mine is Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs.
Why?
And so
like, this card's terrible.
This card is amazing because so for two reasons. One, we've now learned that Nicol Bolas did not create Amonkhet. He just showed up and effed with it, right?
True.
And made it his own.
He did.
So the idea that there's a... And he is pronouncing himself as the God Pharaoh.
It's true.
Right? So just the simple idea of having a Wall of Forgotten Pharaohs leads you to believe that at one point in Amonkhet's past, they had actual pharaohs that they cared about and they perhaps built monuments to, right? Because we're literally looking at one.
Okay.
And so you have to remember that, like, a set is limited, especially a small set. Like, you know, there are only so many cards, and they're not just making stuff to make it, right? Like, things get cut, things get kept for a reason. And so I think that this might be a really interesting storyline window into our possible future Amonkhet when we revisit it in like a supplemental set or maybe even like another full set where we get to see Amonkhet returning to these like traditional Egyptian roots that don't have any bolus flair.
Sure.
Right? I think that's really cool.
You can see that there's not many carvings around them either, right?
There is, other than the way that they're holding their oddly bolus horn-shaped swords, there's nothing else that really makes me think bolus in looking at this. You know,
interesting. This is the trapdoor they often can leave in sets. Clever, good find.
Right.
I just went with something phenomenally comical, and that's River. What is it? Hoopo. I'm pretty sure it's Hoopo. And hilarious. It's a just a colorful
Hoopo. Yupo.
Yupo. It's a Edgar Allan and River Hoopo. But Ryan Pankost, known Rhode Island native, just painted a river of blood and a colorful bird.
Just went out back and painted a bird?
Just a bird. And it's pretty. Okay, fine. Whatever. Two drop, 1/3 that gains life and draws a card late game is actually really, really good and limited. That's why it's not common, among other things. But it's one of these cards that goes to live on beyond itself in the game. You know, these community cards that they just love. For what reason, Wizards doesn't know. Fibblefip, great example. Had no idea it was going to blow up. And this card, River Hoopo, is getting that same treatment. Stephen Raffel, our boy, who makes a variety of images, he's of community-minded things, has a coloring book page of the River Hoopo, which is super funny that you could take and, you know, bring to your LGS to make as a coloring book thing for kids. And, you know, Magic the Amateur is super on this bird. You know, they look for the cutest creature in the set. And he's cute and adorable and pink. And he's traditionally
painted.
It was
in an Inkwell Looter comic, too, where the Hoopo lands on the egg in between Bolus's horns and hatches it into, like, a multicolor Bolus baby.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can't...
Like, what is going on inside his brain?
You can't expect the weird stuff that'll come out, but Vorthos people just do that. And I just wanted to make a spotlight on sometimes you get some weird cards that live on their own. And, you know, we'll post the art below and the link to so you can see it too.
Can you imagine just like the creative team at Wizards? They're like, oh man, like the Eternalized things are so cool and these demons are awesome. And like, oh, the Snow Bradley art with the amazing sun. Like, people are going to love this set. And everyone's just like, yo, Hoopos though.
Like the best laid plans.
Everyone just loves the Hoopo.
Like everything they tried hard on, no one
this
cares.
This is probably like a 3 a.m. art description where they're like, I don't know, dude. It's a blue-green bird that like, you pay and gain life and draw a card. Just like give it to Pankos, tell him to paint a chicken in the river. Like, who cares?
Just doesn't even matter, and it's
just
now
paint a chicken in the river of blood. It's
he's going to be signing this card for a really long time.
No one's going to like it anyway, and everyone loves it.
It just kills for it. It's like it's the one like shining example that the set is going to live beyond. Like no matter the devastation, Hoopo's still going to be killing it. Like
right? People are going to be like, so our devastation. Like what was your favorite card? Was it Nicol Bolas? Was it, you know, the Damnation invocation? Like, nah, man, Hoopo. It was Hoopo.
Like
the Hoopo was boss.
Can you give me like a legendary Hoopo soon, like the commander set?
Man. Yeah, I want to make a Hoopo deck.
Dude, we haven't had a bird set in a long time. Like it's been long time.
I would roll a legendary Hoopo.
Dude, I'd be all
the
about
Hoopo.
It. I hope they bring it back. I hope they do. That'd be great.
The last Hoopo. It'd be like a dodo, like the last Hoopo.
Oh, that'd be so sad. That'd be so sad. Like his plume would be all sad.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like the last Hoopo on Amonkhet, and like he barely has any colors.
Oh no!
She barely has any colors in her feathers.
Oh, the last Hoopo's hope.
Maybe she's all gray, but has just one rainbow feather.
Okay, this is like this. This is becoming just like a Sarah McLachlan commercial, real quick here.
Sitting on a nest of broken eggs.
Oh my God, Ant! You're just taking that night, going sideways. Don't hit on the Hoopo. Hoopo's fine. So
So on that note,
that's a review. We had a good time. This set's been fun. Ant, where else can they find you if they want to do follow-ups on Hoopo lore?
So I would say the easiest way is just hit me up on Twitter at Antestor. You can also go to my website at antestor.com. If you want to just like check out any cards that I've written names and flavor text for. I worked on this set as well, so I have a few scattered throughout. Sadly, I didn't name the Hoopo. I wish I did.
Should have been. That would have been sweet.
I should have. Ugh.
That would have been a feather in the cap.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I would have just quit, I think.
No, you got to go out on top, yeah. Don't go after the decline. That's bad.
Whoever named the Hoopo, like, just... Oof. How do you top that? How do you top the Hoopo?
Legendary Hoopo.
I don't... Yeah, that's true.
That's about Legendary it. Hoopo. That's about it. Planeswalker Hoopo after that. That's it. Yeah. That's all you got. I mean, that's all you got,
Planeswalker
man.
Hoopo would be sweet.
Planeswalker Invocation Hoopo.
That's I can't wait. Yeah, like, I could see, like, 10 years from now, Ethan Fleischer is working on, like, Commander 2050. And he's like, you know what, guys? We got to bring back the Hoopo. We got to do it. It's time.
I like how Ethan's the guy that we think that like keeps like posted
keeps
notes in his
Vorthos
pocket.
Dreams alive,
like,
man.
He does. Well, he's
he
the one who actually.
Keeps alive.
Okay, for people that don't know, he'll occasionally put out questions on old lore because he's reading through the books. And, you know, that makes you assume that any weird thing that isn't done, like the token for Ophiomancer, which still hasn't been made, that he'll just magically do it, like, 6 to 18 months from now. And it's kind of come true a little bit already, which is just hilarious to us. But Ethan's good people. But Ant, we got to stay under 30 minutes. People can find me. I'm at Vorthos Mike. I'm actually easy to get a hold of now that the art show is over. I'm working on 1 to 2 for next year, for 2018. No word on it yet, but you'll hear when you hear. But otherwise, GP Minneapolis is around the corner, so I'm going to go quiet mode for 2 weeks, and then I'll be back at it. We'll be making more Vorthos episodes here. We do have some interesting people we want to interview, which we'll get back to. But otherwise, thanks for watching today, and we'll be back again soon.